It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rick will be back with me on Wednesday. The ongoing civil war in Syria began in March of 2011. But since then, refugees have exited the country in masses. The number of refugees now numbers over 2.3 million, making this one of the largest forced migrations of people since World War II. This kind of forced migration will have a lasting impact on lives as well as cultural identities, economies, and relationships across the Middle East. During the past 2.5 years, the global community has taken a smaller role in aiding those involved in this crisis than similar crises historically. Washington Post senior correspondent Kevin Sullivan recently traveled to Lebanon, Turkey, and Jordan with photographer Linda Davidson to document this crisis. The result is a multimedia report on 18 lives changed by the war, which can be found at the Washington Post. Kevin Sullivan joins us now. Kevin, thanks for joining the show.
My pleasure.
So 2.3 million. Could you give us a sense of the scale of this crisis beyond just that number?
Well, you got to remember, Syria is a country of about 22 million people. So you have 2.3 million who have actually left the country. There are another 6.5 who've been internally displaced, so who've been forced out of their homes but are still inside Syria, and then 3 million more inside the country who are, you know, in desperate need of humanitarian aid. So it's huge. I mean, it's more people than Rwanda. I mean, I think only Afghanistan and maybe what we saw in South Asia after World War II are really bigger movements of people. It's immense.
If we were talking about these kind of numbers with a natural disaster, say, we would expect to see a really big public humanitarian response. Are we seeing anything along that scale in this crisis?
We're really not. It's, you know, the UN has asked, it's the largest ask in their history. They've asked for $5 billion to help the refugees and those displaced inside Syria. And they've gotten only 62% of that. I mean, that's a lot of money, but to give you some perspective on this, look at the experience of Save the Children. They've been raising money for the refugees for almost 3 years, and they've raised about $1.6 million. In the first 2 weeks after the typhoon in the Philippines recently, they raised $6 million. And after the Haiti earthquake in 2010, in the first 6 months, they raised $26 million. So this just isn't getting the same sort of attention. It's not capturing the world's hearts and imaginations the way that some of these other catastrophes have.
Let's look at the impact these people are having on the areas they're going to. You have stats like, I think it was a refugee camp is now the fourth largest city in Jordan, I think it was. And these are people who have suffered physical difficulties, war, been being forced to move. When this many people are migrating, what kind of effect is this having on things like cultural identity and the countries that they're moving into?
Well, it's very, very difficult on everyone. You know, as you say, the Satri camp in Jordan is the fourth largest city there now, and the people there, they're really not from anywhere at the moment. I mean, we watched a baby being born there, and this child. And there are probably a dozen born in the camp every day. This child is born into a nation that's not its own and really has no – part of the point we're trying to make with this series is that this is not a very temporary change. This is something that's going to last for years, decades, maybe for the entire lives of a lot of these people. And this baby we saw born in Jordan will be there for the foreseeable future. And what that does to that child's identity is really anyone's guess.
And you mentioned people in Lebanon. When the Palestinians came there decades ago, they thought, the Lebanese thought these Palestinian refugees would be there maybe a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's right. The Lebanese ambassador said to me that this scares us to death because, exactly when the Palestinians came here in 1947, we thought they'd be here for 2 weeks, and they're still there. So the Lebanese, unlike the Jordanians and the Turks, have not established formal camps. They're terrified to do that because they're just afraid that once they do that, tents become more permanent shelters, become apartment buildings, become towns. And the Lebanese have seen what happens when these camps become, permanent part of the landscape. And the Turks are terrified about that. The Jordanians are living it as a reality already. Everyone is afraid of this becoming permanent, but everyone knows that it's going to become at least something that's semi-permanent, and that's the rub.
When we hear a phrase like refugee crisis, it makes me feel like it's kind of distant. It's sort of diplomatic jargony. A lot of what you're trying to do in your feature here is put a human face on this. And I was hoping you could tell a couple of the stories, including that of a father and his 7-year-old daughter, I think it was, wounded in a bomb attack. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what we're trying to do. I think people hear this and they think it's just sort of, it's those people over there. And I think that's part of why they don't donate. But yeah, we met all kinds of people. This little 7-year-old girl, 5 months, we were there in October, and 5 months earlier, her home had been blown up by a bomb, you know, by a bomb dropped by a plane from the Syrian military. And it killed most of her family. And her father went digging through the rubble and found her, brought her to the hospital, and they told him that they couldn't do anything for her there. So she's now in a hospital in Turkey. And, you know, 5 months later, this tiny little girl is just, her body is just shattered. She's, you know, it's unclear whether she's ever going to be able to walk again. You know, we saw this over and over and over again. We saw in Lebanon, we saw 50 people living in a junkyard. And, you know, they're all, and these kids are all walking around in sandals or bare feet, and the ground is all glass and metal and scars or open wounds on their hands and feet. Everywhere we went, we met a guy who's 105 years old. He was actually quite hysterical. But for 104 years, this man lived in the same village in Syria, and then the fighting came and forced him out. We met an 18-year-old girl with a big wound the size of a quarter in her back where she had been hit by a sniper. We met an 11-year-old boy working in a park selling tissues to try to raise a little money for his family. You know, over and over and over again, you see these people who, you know, were just like people that you and I know. I mean, we met a plastic surgeon in Lebanon who lived an incredibly elegant lifestyle back in Syria, and now is just, you know, his money's about to run out, and he doesn't know what he's going to do. So it's really tragic stuff.
Well, and when you think of any one of these things happening to a person, being shot, losing their family, losing livelihood, losing their home, losing their country, and all of these things are happening to people at the same time. How do they talk about this? How are they bearing up under it?
Well, you know, imagine this happening to you or to me, and that's how they're doing it. It isn't like these people are somehow have genetic predisposition to being good refugees. These are people who had real lives, and suddenly they're gone, and they all want to go home. I didn't meet one person who didn't want to go back to Syria, not under the current circumstances, but someday to return to their home. But they also understand that their lives there are gone. I mean, their homes have been bombed, their villages are gone, entire city blocks. I mean, we've all seen the pictures. There is no life for them to go back to. So now they're faced with trying to retune their minds to the idea that they're going to be living in a foreign country maybe for the rest of their lives. And, you know, some people, you know, I talked to one guy who's living in the back of a truck, and he said, and he laughed all the time. He made a lot of jokes, and I said, boy, you certainly seem to be taking this well. And he said, well, you know, we laugh because we have to. We laugh because we're desperate. And I think that's the truth here, is that this is happening to normal, everyday people from all walks of life who never, ever imagined that they would be in this situation.
How do they talk about the politics of the war and the people who are leading the fight on both sides of it?
Well, you know, generally speaking, these are people who don't like the Syrian government and blame the government for what's happened to them. But you do find other people. I met, you know, a couple of people who said that they had been forced out of the country because of violence, you know, because terrible things that had happened to them from the rebels. So this is, you know, there's more than one side to this. I mean, people are being forced out for all kinds of reasons. And mostly I met people who were just heartbroken that it had happened. I mean, they're angry, but more than that, they just want to go home.
Are we being the world, I guess, anywhere close to meeting the immediate needs of people for food, sanitation, shelter, maybe education for the kids?
No, not even close. You know, Turkey has done a remarkable job. They've spent $2.5 billion on these camps, and they have 200,000 people in camps now. And the camps are, you know, it's not summer camp, but it's not, you know, the conditions are pretty reasonable. They're doing okay. But then, you know, they have 700,000 refugees in the country, so most of them are living outside of camps and in just terrible conditions. And these people don't have, you know, some of them go to school, some of them have clean water, some of them Some of them are doing okay or have health care, but I would say the vast majority don't. And, you know, the worst snowstorm in years has hit the region in the past week or so. And these are people in plastic sandals, you know, who are now dealing with snow on the ground. I just don't know how they do it.
All right. Kevin, thanks for joining us and thanks for your coverage of this story.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Kevin Sullivan with The Washington Post. We've been talking about his feature series on Syrian Civil War refugees. Coming up next, we'll take a look at answers to some of our everyday science questions with a Wisconsin science teacher who's become known as Mr. Science.